Welcome to What Moves You, a Speedway Motors podcast for people who love cars. I'm Joe McCullough, and today we're talking to Brian Brennan. Brian spent his entire career as an automotive journalist, including almost 25 years as editor of Street Rodder magazine. Today we'll talk about his new magazine called Modern Rodding, as well as some other titles from a brand new venture called In the Garage Media. We'll also get some insights on the history of hot rodding and hear what Brian thinks about street rods of the future. The first question that I want to ask you is to go back to the very beginning. Where did it all start with you? You've more or less devoted your life to cars and hot rods. How did that get started with you?
Oh boy, that you really are going back now. If you really want to go back, obviously I was a little kid building model cars. But I was always fascinated by car magazines, and of course the first magazine that I ever actually went out and asked my mom to buy for me was Rod and Custom. Okay. And it was still in the small format. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the Customs that fascinated me the most.
Really?
And so I really got into the Customs, and of course I like the hot rods and that sort of thing, but that's where it started. And then from there, of course, we all read Hot Rod Magazine and did that. Now, remember, we're now talking the mid-60s and the muscle cars, now mm-hmm. picking up some steam in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And so my first new car, I had a 67 Nova, you know, Super Sport, and it, you know, 327 with four-speed and all that. And then, of course, I worked after schools, after high school, I worked at two places. I worked at Hayden Prophet's shop on Annabelle in Garden Grove, and then I worked at Bill Thomas's shop in Anaheim. Oh, I lived in Garden Grove, but my high school was in Anaheim. Uh-huh. So I went to Servite High School, and then after that, I would go to Bill Thomas. Now, I did nothing exotic. I swept floors and took the trash out, okay?
Well, but still, you were there right in the middle of it.
Yes, I was. And I got to meet a lot of good people, a lot of famous people that helped me get going. But what I learned at Bill Thomas and also at Hayden's is I learned how to work on Chevrolet motors. Mm-hmm. And so what I did is I used to, for $75, I would swap a guy's cam out for him. And then for $150, I could rebuild Corvette fuel injection units.
Oh,
and so that's what I was doing on the side. So that's how I made my, let's call it hot rod money.
Right.
To keep going. And then when I got to high school and then graduated high school, I was more and more involved with Hayden Prophet. And then the funny car started creeping onto the scene. Mm-hmm. One thing led to another. And of course, Hayden's shop, many of the East Coast guys, the drag racers, whether it be Chrisman or Eddie Sharpman or Pete Seaton, you know, the Seaton Shaker or be any of those guys, they would come out and they would use Hayden's shop as a point of reference. That's where they would work out of as they moved around the West Coast. So I'd end up in either at Beeline Dragway in Phoenix, or I'd end up in Bakersfield, or obviously Lions Long Beach, mm-hmm. Lions in Long Beach. That was another famous hangout, and then Orange County. And I was the gopher. So for all of these teams that would come into town, you always needed someone who could take the oil from changing the oil between rounds and throw it away and come back and clean stuff up. Well, that's what I did. Right. I did all the garbage work. And what it led to was I got to know a lot of guys. And as I knew these, quote, famous people, magazine guys started hanging around them.
Right.
Now, I was irrelevant, but the point is I was watching all of this.
Yeah.
And I happened to be a journalism major in college. Oh, okay. So I get my degree, and lo and behold, a fellow by the name of Tex Smith, who goes back to the earliest days of Hot Rod Magazine and Rod and Custom and all that, he was starting a book. It was a motorcycle magazine, actually. It was called Street Chopper for Tom McMullen.
Uh-huh.
And he hired me. I was the only one from my graduating class at Cal State Fullerton that had any sort of knowledge or cared about automotive.
Oh,
so I was the only one that got an interview. and I got the job, and I worked for Tom and Tex at McMullen Publishing. And it was motorcycles. It was choppers. Mm-hmm. And then we started a book called Hot Bike, and then it was high performance motorcycles and that sort of thing. But the intent was to always move over to the other side and get a car magazine, a performance mm-hmm. magazine. So that's what led to Street Rodder. And so I was on the initial staff of Street Rodder and all that sort of thing. And that kind of got me going. And that's where my initial love for the cars came from. And that's where my initial love for magazines came from and how I got into all of that. Somewhere mixed in all of that, I got deeply involved in off-road racing in Baja for years.
Oh, wow.
Did off-road magazines based on that. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, I had my own drag car, and we won the AHRA Winter Nationals 3 years with that, really? Which was a C-modified sports Corvette, a 57 Corvette. Huh. So that's what got my love for Corvettes. So while the hot rod thing is going on, I'm off-roading on the weekends or playing around with Corvettes during the week, and all of this goes on and on for years and years, and the rest, as they say, is history.
You know, I grew up in muscle cars and sure. 90s Fox body Mustangs and stuff, and really didn't know anything about hot rods. And then when I got bit by the hot rod bug, I used to stop at the grocery store on my way to work. I worked at this crappy little video store, and I would stop at the grocery store. I would buy a Street Rodder, and then between customers behind the counter, I would sneak read Street Rodder. And that's really where I learned how a straight axle suspension worked and how early Fords were sure. set up. And I've always have this real sentimental sort of fondness towards the subject matter that was covered in that magazine. You know, and I guess you were at the helm the whole time.
Well, in the early days, I was there for the first couple of years, and then I moved on and we did a book called, when Tex and I left McMullen, we went on and did a book called Rod Action. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed there until about 85. He had moved on and went to work for Hemmings and went to work for the Great Race Organization and things like that, Interstate Battery. I then moved on from Rod Action, and for, let's say, 7 years, somewhere in there, I wandered away from the automotive business, the automotive mm-hmm. magazine business, and I got involved with the company that does Trailer Life magazine. Okay. And because of my off-roading background, that lent well. So I was doing camper articles and trailer articles and towing articles mm-hmm. and that sort of thing for a few years, and then did some things on my own. And as luck would have it, it was Ron Cerdano, our buddy Ron, mm-hmm. who was at the Street Rod Nationals, and he was sitting on a wall talking to Tom Vogley, who was then the editor of Street Rodder. Mm-hmm. And Tom was telling Ron that he was going to move on. The company was expanding, you know, mm-hmm. McMullen. By then, it was no longer McMullen. It was McMullen Argus. Mm-hmm. And they were starting to buy up these smaller magazine companies. And they were in the process of buying CSK, who I was doing some freelance for. And they did Muscle Mustangs and Fast Forward. They did mm-hmm. Vet Magazine. You know, they did those kinds of books. Right. And so Tom is telling Ron, you know, I've got to move within the company, and I've been looking for an editor for Street Rodder, and we just can't find anyone. And so Ron says, well, Brian and I are working together again, and, you know, you should talk to him. He might want to do that. And Tom goes, you mean Brian Brennan, who was on Street Rodder way back in the beginning? He goes, yeah. He says, well, I don't know how to get a hold of him. So one thing leads to another, mm-hmm. And Ron puts Tom and I together, and Tom hires me, and that my remarriage mm-hmm. to Street Rodder magazine lasted for almost 24 years.
Oh, man.
until I came back in roughly 97, 96, mm-hmm. somewhere right in there. And it went until December 6th of, 2019.
Right.
When, you know, the Discovery Group canceled all magazines. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. not all. They right. kept Hot Rod and Motor Trend, but they canceled all the other books. And so, you know, there you go. And that's kind of the segue that got me into what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. What are you doing now?
Well, I am working harder now than I've ever worked. And so you would start saying to yourself, I'm doing something wrong, but I think I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
a lot of us lost our jobs when they killed off all the magazines. And Tim Foss, who had been the publisher there at Street Rodder for, 20 some years, but he had risen through the ranks himself, and he was the man in charge, the publisher for Hot Rod and all the other books. He was in charge of all of them. And he left, and because he worked for a different segment or aspect of the company, and I knew I would be leaving. And we always said, if we ever got the chance, if we both end out on the street, we should get together. Well, we both did end up out on the street, and we got together, and we started a company that was called In the Garage Media. And we were extremely fortunate enough to find capitalization that allowed us to start with two magazines. And that was Modern Rodding, obviously the one I'm doing, and then Classic Truck Performance, which is what Rob Fortier is doing. Now, Rob was another one of us from the old days who was, like myself and others, was caught up in the massive layoffs. And so he came along with us, and Yaz Fahateen, who was Tim's assistant, she came along with Tim right out of the chute as well. So the four of us started, and we've now been at it since, let's call it Friday, March 13th was our official day, which, to really burn that into your memory, that was also the same day that the state of California shut down.
Oh, geez.
Because the whole COVID thing.
Right.
That's when it started really ramping up. And so the world, as we knew it, shut down.
Right.
And we're going, holy crap. what a time to be starting a new company and a new magazine. But now, now it sounds funny. We're talking what, 6-7 months later, and I'm already using the term in retrospect. in retrospect, some would say that really wasn't a good time to start something like this. But Tim and I were in a meeting with Bill Smith one time, good old Speedy Bill. And now this was probably at least 20 years ago. And Bill told us that one of his secrets for success was, in the worst of times, he would always double down. He would find it, whatever he had to do, he would find a way to make sure he kept the business going. He made sure that all of his customers knew about him. We're still here. You can still get stuff from us, and we're going to be here when this all ends.
Right.
And I'll never forget that conversation. And so Tim and I, we have once a week meetings. In fact, tomorrow we'll have our once a week meeting, and where everyone gets together, and we always remind ourselves, hey, Speedy Bill made it, and he made it through some tough times.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said is, you have to believe in what you're doing. No question about that. You have to have a little luck, and we've had some luck, and you better know what you're doing and go for it. And so that's where we're at. And, we've started out with the two bi-monthly books, which, as I mentioned earlier when you and I were talking, with their January issues, they become monthly. Well, at the same time, that January issue, we're going to come out with the new book, All Chevy Performance.
Okay.
And another one of us from the old days, and that's Nick Licata, who at the time the magazines were killed, he was the editor of Chevy Performance, and he also had edited one of the books earlier that was Camaro Performers. So he's buried deep into the Chevy Performance side.
Yeah.
So he's going to take that book over and run with that. So that's kind of how we got into In the Garage Media and our three titles. We're in Placentia, California. I mean, our physical address. That's where we're located. And what's interesting is I can walk out. We're right on Orangethorpe Avenue, and I can walk out the front door of our office right there at the curb and look to the left, and about a half a mile down the road is the original Street Rodder offices.
Oh, really?
Yep. And if I look to the right is where I originally lived. And I used to get up every morning and drive down Orangethorpe. Now, this filled with orange trees back then.
Yeah.
And I would drive to work each morning. And so I get a chuckle out of the fact that 50 years later, I haven't moved very far. So.
Well, you just kind of made a big loop right back to where you began.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what's happened. So there you go. I mean, that's how we've done it. These times, as you know, they're serious times, and they're meant to be taken seriously, and people have to pay attention and take care of themselves. But the reality is we are coming through the other end of this, and all of us that are coming through are going to do well. And we're going to have the hobby's going to be bigger and stronger than ever. Mm-hmm. And that's been reinforced by talking with a lot of people like yourself who work for all these different companies who are saying, you know what, this isn't a good thing, but we're all getting through it. And it looks like it's working all right. And we're doing pretty well. And we're very optimistic going forward. And all of the hot rodders that I either converse with either on the phone or via emails or however, say the same thing. The hobby right now is fighting off a disease, but it's going to come through the other end healthier than ever.
Well, and I think that among other things, it's created kind of a pent up demand for, you know, I mean, I just can't wait to get back out to car shows. And I have set a goal for myself with my personal project to have it at one of the big good guys shows, just because I miss that. And that was part of this sort of the impetus for this podcast, is I miss going out and talking cars with people. And so, you know, we're going to bring it in-house if we can't go out and do it in the parking lot. But I think that next season, when this is all cleared up, everybody's just going to be bursting at the seams to get out and get back to the car shows and to the drag strip and everywhere else.
Oh, I think you're 100% correct. We see it around here. There's a little thing called the quarantine cruise, and it started Jason Scudellari, who used to work with us. He was the head of our tech center and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Him and a buddy started what was called the quarantine cruise, and I think they've now done 5 or 6 of them. What started out as 20 cars has grown up to 2,000 cars on a weekend.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so that's been quite a sight to see. There was a truck event here this past weekend up in Auburn, California, and it was a C10 event, and they had 450 trucks that showed up, and they had to do what they had to do as far as the social distancing and all of that, but they pulled it off, and they're fulfilling everyone's desire to, man, I've been locked up a long time. I got to get out there.
So let's talk about what's actually... If you open up a copy of Modern Rodding, do you want to talk about what you're trying to create there?
In many ways, Modern Rodding is picking up where Street Rodder left off, but it is not the same animal. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, Street Rodder had some highly defined parameters that it needed to stay within because there were so many other magazines in the company.
Right.
Now, Modern Rodding is going to be treated more, it's going to have a broader horizon. It's going to be able to reach a larger audience. We're still catering to, let's call it the traditional hot rodder. And let's say for the sake of discussion, that means pre-48 hot rods or 40, pre-49, 48 and earlier.
Right.
Yes, we're doing all of that. So if you want to know about roadsters and high boys and coupes and sedans and Phaetons, and you want to know about I-beam axles or tube axles or solid rear ends or, you know, drum brakes or disc brakes or any of these conversions. Right. Yes, we're doing all of that. But we're not stopping in the 60s or 70s. We haven't built in a deadline date. Mm-hmm. We are letting the hobby dictate where we go. And by that, I mean, if it becomes popular and it turns out to be a 71 or 72 Chevy Monte Carlo, we're going to be covering that.
Yep.
We're going to be showing what's going on with the build, because we're going to let the hobby, we're going to show what's going on, but we're also going to let the hobby show us where it wants to go. So we're going to follow the hobby. And that's our primary goal.
I'm pretty sure that I saw on your Instagram a preview of a feature that you were going to do on a Maverick. Am I making that up?
No.
I think that's cool. And I mean, personal confession, I've always thought that Mavericks were actually kind of cool. But bigger than that, I think that reinforces what you're saying. You know, imagine picking up a pre-48 Street Rod magazine and seeing a Maverick. I mean, people would fall over. But to be able to embrace that, and it's a cool Maverick, you know, so to be able to embrace that and feature that right along with a Model A Roadster, I think that's a pretty neat deal.
A 72 Maverick may not have been the first car that would come to your mind for modern rodding.
Yeah.
But when you see it, you're going to go, man, that's really cool. And no longer can we say, well, it's not old enough. Mm-hmm. I got news for you. That 72 Maverick is older now than the 32 Ford was when we started Street Rodder.
Right. So, right.
You know, all bets are off. You're going to see, yes, you're going to see CUDAs or Chargers or Challengers or Mavericks or Mustangs. You're going to see a breadth of cars, but what you will notice is the build style. Uh-huh. And the build style is what has been commonly referred to in the last 20 years as a street rod build style, which tends to be, I won't say it has to be higher end or upper end, but it's leaning that way. Mm-hmm. The car's first purpose isn't drag racing or autocrossing or something like mm-hmm. that. The car's first purpose is to be aesthetically pleasing and represent what's happening in our world as far as powertrains and accessories mm-hmm. and paint and that sort of thing. And let's remember, it's got to be streetable. Mm-hmm. So these are all street cars. So we're pretty excited about that. I mean, yes, you are going to see a 32 Ford parked right next to a 72 Maverick. And frankly, that mimics what's going on at the Good Guys national events. Yep. It mimics what's going on at the NSRA events. So like I said, we don't want to sit here and tell the hobby, this is what you've got to like, mm-hmm. or this is what you've got to do. We're going to sit back and we're going, this is where the hobby wants to go. So let's find out what makes this tick. And that's what we're going to bring to the audience. And so that's what we're doing.
I think that's cool. And I think that that's our community, our car community needs more open arms rather than people saying, well, you don't have a traditional hot rod or you don't have a whatever, you're not cool enough to park with us or hang out with us or be in our magazine, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, and let's face it. There are some guys who like a traditional hot rod, a little either Model A V8 or maybe it's a little 32 Roadster High mm-hmm. Boy. No problem. That's very cool. And if that's what you want, and those are the guys you want to hang out with, more power to you. Just understand a hot rod is a much larger animal. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more spokes in this wheel than there used to be. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot more going on. And frankly, for me, I find that more interesting and I find mm-hmm. it more entertaining and it gives me more to talk about. So mm-hmm. hopefully it will make the magazine more interesting every month.
I'm going to change the focus back to you. What do you have in your personal garage? I know about your Roadster.
Yeah. I have to talk carefully about that because once a year when all the registration fees and insurance, when the registration and insurance comes due, my wife casually reminds me how many cars we have. And I go, oh, no. We don't have 12 or 13
that
cars.
Can't be right.
Yeah. And she goes, yeah, we do. And I can prove it. So no, there's the little 29 High Boy that was, did it with Dean Livermore at Hot Rods by Dean. And that car goes back to, well, it actually goes back to 1998 when, Magoo or Dick McGugarack, mm-hmm. Magoo, he's since passed away, but a great hot rodder who was very influential in the 60s, 70s, and mm-hmm. 80s. For my 50th birthday, he bought me a SoCal frame, one of their new stepped frames.
Oh, yeah.
And what I did is I took that over to Dean's, and I said, Dean, I want to recreate my original High Boy that you built for me back in 1976. And so that's how that kind of got started.
Okay.
So I've had that car beginnings from about 1998, but it was on the road in approximately 2005-ish. Mm-hmm. And so I have that. As far as early cars go, I have a Model A Roadster pickup that I just parted with here about a year ago. But I have a close cab Model A pickup that I still have that is really close to, and it's been really close for far too long, but it's close to running.
Yeah.
I've got the makings for another little Model A roadster on a Model A frame.
Oh, okay.
Not the traditional 32, but a little Model A frame. And then, of course, I've got my 72 Suburban, which is my almost everyday car that I drive. I've owned that for years and years, and that truck is just a hoot. I mean, it is a lot of fun to drive that. And then, of course, I've got my 68 Corvette. That's a driver. Then my 71 Corvette that we're doing. And then I've got my 55 Chevy that's done in a gasser style that the body and frame are together. The drivetrain, powertrain is in it. We've just got to get off our duffs and just finish up the interior and then body and paint it. And we're done.
So, that's cool. I didn't know you had one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got that. And of course I've got the usual, a collection of everyday mom and pop cars, you know, that you need to get around in. But you know, that's kind of what we've got hiding out there. And there's a few other things that I've probably forgotten, but somewhere there's somewhere in the garage, you know, somewhere buried out there.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I was going through some pictures the other day, and I went back to the display at Louisville at the 50th anniversary of the Street Rod Nationals. And there was little John Butera's car, and there was the McMullen Roadster, and, you know, all of these, the Eliminator was there, all of these super duper famous hot rods and customs from the years. What is your favorite hot rod or custom of all time? Do you know?
Wow.
It can be yours. I'll accept your Roadster as an answer.
No, my Roadster wouldn't even crack the top 20. the problem I run into is I like cars. I like trucks. I like Corvettes. So I've got my favorites in all these different categories. I would say this, however, there are two cars that are always going to stick out in my mind, regardless of how old I become, and I hope it's very old, and regardless of how long I'm in the industry or what I do. Mm-hmm. And one is the McMullen Roadster, because that literally goes back to when I was really getting into the hobby, and because it was Tex Smith who photographed it for the cover of a couple of magazines, and it was because I got to know Tom right at the time he sold the car.
Oh, okay.
So there's that. And then, of course, you know, Roy Brizio refurbished the car and restored it and did such an exquisite job for Jorge Zaragoza. That car, because I've been able to see it, and it was in the display.
It
was there. And that brought back a lot of really neat memories, not because I lived with the car, but because of the people that I got to know because of it.
Right.
So, and let's face it, it was the logo on Street Rodder magazine for 20 years or 25 years. It was a long time.
That was a pretty memorable thing, looking through the rack at the grocery store and seeing that flamed 32 Roadster up on the top right corner. I mean, that was a cool deal.
No question about it. The other car that I'd have to fall back on, and I'm sure a lot of hot rodders know this car and they love it, and that would have been the California Kid of Pete Shaporis from SoCal Speed Shop. Now, he obviously built that car long before that, and that goes back to the days of Pete and Jake and all of that. But I had the opportunity to drive cross country several times with Pete in that car. So that car does have a personal connection. I mean, I can give you chapter and verse of Pete and I driving across country with the likes of Jim Jacobs and his little yellow coupe, and then Jim Ewing with the Super Bell coupe, the orange coupe. And I've got tons of funny, great stories with Jim and I in the orange coupe driving across country. Other than my Roadster, I probably have more miles driving across country in Ewing's coupe than I do any other car. But Pete Shaporis is a SoCal Kid because of the movie and all of the notoriety that it had. That's kind of a big deal, and because Pete was such a good personal friend, and I always thought he was a class act. I always thought he behaved, his company behaved, and him and Jake ran Pete and Jake's the way I thought from the outside looking in. the way a street rod company mm-hmm. should be run. It gives me a lot of good memories. So that's a strong car, strong car.
If you go to Pete and Jake's, you know, we stopped by on the road tour here a couple of years ago, and they still have the rack of all of the original tooling that Jake made, you know, back in the day. And, you know, it's just kind of sitting there collecting dust. And to me, it seems like, you know, because of all of that, those stories that you're talking about, you know, those kind of belong in a museum or something more than they do anywhere else.
Well, boy, wouldn't that be cool if there was a place like Speedway Motors that had a hot rod division of museum? We can load that up with all kinds of stuff.
If you can make that happen, I'll go right along with it.
And that's something too, that just to touch on it ever so, you know, just to touch on it, but museums are an important aspect of our hobby. And because it's been around a long time, they're starting to become more and more cars that have notoriety mm-hmm. or have history associated mm-hmm. with it. And Speedway Motors, the museum you guys have is just out of this world, because it does touch on so many different aspects mm-hmm. of the performance automobile. And not only that, but don't you still have the lunch bucket, section, and still have the guitar section.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of aspects that are, and then there's the carousel and the tether cars and mm-hmm. all the other good mm-hmm. stuff. So there's a lot going on there that captures a lot of interest. But if you spend the time and walk through the museum, you realize it brings you back in time mm-hmm. and it gives mm-hmm. you so many good memories. And that's what a museum should do. So, the exhibit you're talking about that we did from the 50th Street Rod Nationals, in which we had the approximately 16 cars that represented the history of Street Rodder magazine. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mm-hmm. supposed to represent the hobby or the NSRA's time or anything else. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to represent good things that happened during Street Rodder's tenure. And so that's why the cars that were picked were there.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd sure be great to have a place where at some point in time, some of these cars could go to live and other people could then go see them. It'd just be fantastic.
One of the high points of my history being into hot rods was going to the 75th anniversary of the 32 Ford at the Grand National Roadster Show in 2007. And I was pretty young at the time. And that was my first time at the Roadster Show. And that was my first time seeing pretty much all of those cars. But I still go back to my pictures from that trip. And that was probably a pretty formative thing on me being interested in hot rods and being interested in traditional cars and things like that.
Oh, there's that show, because it had some backing from Ford Motor Company, mm-hmm. Because it was the 32 Ford, there were a lot of things that came together in that show. And John Buck with his group at Rod Shows did such a great job of putting not only the Grand National Roadster Show together, but giving the 32 Ford a place to breathe and bring all this history together. And the number of guys who were responsible for putting that together was just amazing. And of course the selection of the cars were outstanding. And it's been so well documented by the magazines. Yep. By cars being taken from the exhibit and photographed and appearing elsewhere, such as the Rodder's Journal mm-hmm. did a beautiful job on a number of the cars from there. That was a pretty cool thing. I mean, you can talk about the 50th Grand National Roadster Show or the 25th or just whatever you want to talk about, but that particular year and that particular exhibit, that's going to be an all-timer. That was a pretty good deal.
You got that feeling when you walked into that building where all those cars were, you could just feel the history. And it's sort of the same feeling that you get when you walk into the Speedway, you know, the Museum of American Speed. You feel that history and you just can't step away from it. You know, it's hard to leave. It was hard for me to walk out of that building for the last time. You know, it's hard for me to walk out of the museum every time they kick me out, you know.
Oh, that's exactly how it should be. And with the 75th anniversary of the 32 Ford at the Grand National Roadster Show, what made it particularly meaningful is at that point in time, we still had a lot of the early hot rod heroes were still with us, and a number of them were still there, or came to the show. They were there. So you had a chance to look at the car, but you had a chance to actually have talking history in front of you, and you could ask questions and get your own story. And that was something that was particularly fun for me, was I could go around and I could talk to different people and I could get my own story from them on me asking them some questions. And so that made it really special. I thought Carpo did a great job here a couple of years ago when he had the anniversary of the Model A Deuce. The Model A. I'm thinking of 32 highboys and Model A highboys on 32 rails.
Hot rods are all mixed up. Well, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, my 29's got a 32 frame and a 32 grill. What do I know?
Yeah.
Carpo did such a great job again at the Grand National Show, in which he had the building set up and we had all these famous Model A's in there. And that did that's really good because it gives you a chance to see how these hot rods have evolved, but it gives you a chance to see how the hobby evolved. And it gives you a chance to go, well, this came out at the same time as this 32. And so they were both on the roads at the same time. So you get a feel for how hot rodding was back in the day.
Yeah.
It was a good thing.
So you have more or less devoted your life to car magazines of one sort or another. And we've seen all of these sort of gyrations that the industry does and backflips and magazines closing and opening. What is it that keeps you coming back to car magazines?
Well, I obviously have no discernible talent and can get a job anywhere else. So that, okay, we've got that out of the way. Because I know Ron Serodano will listen to this and he'll be sitting down and Jerry Berger and Chuck Varanus and a couple of the other guys who I've known for years and years and years. And first things out of their mouth were, well, Brennan is socially unacceptable and he's unemployable anywhere else. So that's why he has to keep coming back. But from the time I was the littlest guy, I can remember watching television shows that had like, 77 Sunset Strip, you know, with the kooky car, you know, Norm Grabowski's car. Or I can remember Route 66, you know, in the Corvette and Todd and Buzz and their exploits. So as a little guy growing up, I would see these TV shows and I would see these cars and then I'd see the guys associated with the cars and I could identify sort of. I mean, I wasn't as cool as them and I wasn't as old as them, but that's where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And so I've always had a love affair with cars. I've always been involved, at least the first 30 years of my life, I was involved heavily with drag racing and hot rods simultaneously. So that's always kept drawing me in. And I'll be the first to admit, I have had some incredible lucky flips of the coin during my career. And I have survived certain things and I have been brought along in certain areas. And so I've been able to keep doing what I like.
Right.
And I would say a lot of that has to do with the industry. I've made so many friends within the industry who, bless them, they have supported me and stayed with me and helped me through all of the ups and downs. And let me tell you, there's been a few ups and downs in this industry. So
yeah. What do you think the future holds for our hobby, whether that's 5 years or 10 years or 50 years? What do you think lies ahead?
Well, the first thing I would say is the hobby will be here in 50 years and the hobby's going to change. Those are the two constants. Our hot rod hobby will be here and it'll be here in 50 years. Right now, you may not identify or recognize what it may morph into then because of the style of cars and the way things are going to be built. There's no question in my mind, we're going to start seeing, not right away, but within the next 5 years or so, we're going to start to see electric hot rods and they're going to be accepted. I realized that the sound of a V8, there's something visceral about that and it just kind of gets inside of you and grabs hold of you and won't let go. But the sport will continue to exist, but it definitely will change. I think that while the early cars may be a staple and they'll fundamentally, they're going to be here in the early days and they're going to be here going forward. There's no question. And you and I have already talked about this. The events are going to cater to later and later model year cars. It's not going to stay at 72 Chevy pickup trucks. It's going to go through the 90s. In fact, Classic Truck Performance, one of our other titles. We don't have a hard cutoff date. We are acknowledging trucks up into the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Mind you, that's darn near a 30-year-old vehicle right there. So,
well, that makes me feel old.
Yeah, well, don't get me going on feeling old. But that's what you have to do. You have to understand in this hobby, whether you like cars or trucks, you know, it's what's available is what's affordable, and that's what's going to be built. Mm-hmm. So you may not particularly yourself like a style of car or truck that's going to be built here in 5 or 10 years, but the younger rodders who are building those do. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to respect. Mm-hmm. I can remember in the 70s when our hobby was going, we've got to get younger guys involved. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing a good enough job of getting younger guys involved. And I always said then, and I think it's been proven to be true, don't worry about the younger guys. Do what you do best and let the younger guys find what it is they like and let them bring something to the party. You can't give them their cake and ice cream and say, here, this is what you get. No, they may not like that flavor. So they are going to bring what they want. And I think I think fundamentally that's what will keep us healthy and moving forward, is accept the change, accept the different styles of cars that are coming in, and that's what our future holds. So can I tell you which cars? No, but I can just tell you it won't be what you and I are thinking about now.
Right, so, right.
But it will be there.
I'm waiting for the day when my 86 Regal, I can drive through the Good Guys show blaring Motley Crue and be like the rockabilly, you know, the rockabilly rat rod kid.
You clearly have had a misspent youth. But that is exactly true. That could not be a better representation, because there's something in your life that caused you to remember that moment. Mm-hmm. And as we get older, it's those moments we want to remember or recreate to the best of our abilities or imagination or how we remember things.
Right.
We want to recreate those fun times that we either had or thought about having or saw and wanted to participate but couldn't, and we make it now. It's like when I was growing up, we had our 57 Corvette that we drag raced and drove to high school and did all that stuff with. But it was a shoestring project from day one and everything about it. Well, now I have my 68 Corvette that I love to get out and drive. And yeah, I probably went a little too far with this and probably put a little too much effort and a little too much creativity into it, insofar as it didn't look that good when it was new. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of a good time.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
Nostalgia is a strong force in motivating people to make vehicular decisions, I've found.
Oh, there's no question. And the nice thing about nostalgia is it has no memory. What I think, or the way I think something happened in the 60s or 70s, is the way I think it. It may not have been that way. So you know, we all have our goals and you know, more power to you and God love you. Go for it. You know, have fun.
That covers everything that I had on my list to ask you about. Is there anything that you want to revisit, anything regarding in the garage that you want to more fully talk about or plug?
Well, I think we've touched on a lot of fun stuff. The only thing I'd like to say to anyone who would listen to this is, what's going to keep this and the hobby moving forward is for all of us to support one another. Mm-hmm. And that means guys building their cars. If they need something, they have to purchase something. They try to purchase it from someone within the industry to keep them going so they can keep the events going, so that the manufacturers can support the magazines. So that means if you have any inclination and you like to read magazines, whether it be electronic or digital, and remember, our three books, Modern Rodding, Classic Truck Performance, or All Chevy Performance, they're not only in print, but they're also digital. Mm-hmm. So you can look at it on your smartphone or your tablet or your computer, or in our house, we can even turn it on our TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get a subscription that either goes for print or digital or both. It's the support. One hot rodder out there is going to say, well, hell, my subscription's not going to make or break it. Well, your one subscription may not make it or break it, but if all 100,000, 200 or 300,000 out there think that way, that will break it.
Yeah.
Or you can really make the industry and make it stronger. So, it all revolves around the enthusiast. And so we need the support of all of your customers, everyone that opens up a Speedway catalog and purchases a product. They do that because they want this. They like you. They want to support Speedway Motors and have fun with their cars and trucks. Well, same thing applies to us. You know, we need everyone's support out there, and we hope that everyone will subscribe.
Thanks to Brian Brennan for being our guest today. And thanks to all of you for listening to What Moves You, a Speedway Motors podcast. Visit the toolbox at speedwaymotors.com for the photos we referenced in today's episode. Email the podcast at podcast@speedwaymotors.com. If you like what you heard, tell a friend where to find us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.